The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on anything you'd like to talk about your health, as long as it's from a non-drug, non-surgical platform, because we're here to help you out the natural way. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. That's how you find us here, right now, on this rather coming up very cold Sunday afternoon in the nation's capital. It's going to be brutal outside. But bundle up, stay warm, don't go out there without your head in your head. And, you know, by the way, I'm going to teach you something. If you want to stay warm and not get sick, you got to cover your neck. In Asian medicine, there's this thing called wind points, and then the back of the base of your head and neck. Cover up. Put a scarf around that. Make sure your hands are covered and your head's covered. Those are the most important things. You won't lose heat, and you'll keep your body from getting rid of its internal energetic, if you will. So do those things, and I promise you'll feel a whole lot better than you would otherwise. We have a very special program for you in-house today. My guest today, your host this Wednesday evening, January 23rd at 7 p.m., none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. Welcome again, my friend.
Good to be here, Tom.
You know, it was not happy coming in here. It was starting to drop. The wind was kicking up a little bit. It was starting to chill. We talked about 9 degrees it's going to get down to tonight. I think I may want to stay here in the studio.
Well, you know, I like the cold weather.
Yeah, I know you're a skier.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. You just came back, and I'm jealous. And, you know, you got another one coming up soon, and you're going to be going and doing that. And I don't know how you do it. Anyway, listen, this Wednesday evening, you're going to be doing a program on knee and hip pain and the natural approaches to treating and eliminating pain. And so this is a big subject. You know, people say, I can't walk upstairs, my hip hurts. Or I can't go up or downstairs, my knee hurts. Or they both hurt. They're giving them all kinds of problems. They go to the doc, and the doc says, well, we're going to watch it. You're starting to get narrowing of the disc space. You have this. They inject them with steroids. They give them medication. And to no avail. It just continues to break down. So the bottom line is this. The incidence of hip and knee pain, one or the other, or both together, is huge and seems to be getting more so. Is that true?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's getting to be more frequent. I think it goes back to what you said about the watch and see aspect. I'll give docs kudos on the watch part. In other words, not putting into place anything significant as far as an intervention, like a surgery or stuff like that. But it's the see part that's the issue. In other words, just, you know, we'll check up on you in 2 or 3 years. You need to have a strategy. If you don't, the likelihood that whatever's in place as far as the inflammatory components or the degenerative components are probably going to get worse. And then we're almost always going to develop compensation. We're going to move differently to accommodate the pain. Now, what was once just maybe a knee problem, now we have the hip problem or a back problem. So you need to implement something. One of the classic cardinal warning signs when it comes to pain is if it's not going away after a couple weeks, you need to really dig deeper to figure out where it's coming from.
And then take some action on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a diagnosis is only as good as what you do for it.
You know, what people forget, and a lot of physicians forget as well, is that the joint space is not an isolated, by itself, situation that something attacks, or, you know, it decides that because of your family background, it's going to deteriorate necessarily. But this joint space has multiple pieces of influences, and we're talking about musculoskeletal, ligamentous attachments, and things that make it move. Bones don't move by themselves, or joints don't move by themselves. Muscles move bone. So my question, I have many for you today, is how do you evaluate a hip or knee relative to joint? First of all, can a joint be the sole cause of the problem, or is it always mechanically something else? That's probably a better way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Can the joint be the sole cause of it? I would say in the case of an autoimmune condition, let's say an RA, yes, it could attack that joint, but there's the underlying issue is the person has some sort of autoimmune problem. So I don't think you need to look at it that way. You're always going to have concomitants with the pain pattern, meaning you're going to have the surrounding area get involved. So muscles are either going to become tighter or maybe looser. Ligaments are going to get thicker. The joint surface is going to break down. So you need to look at all of those things together if you want the outcome to be the best possible.
You know, it's an interesting situation because mechanically we look at the interrelationship of the body. We look at how people walk, their gait patterns, how the, you know, and particularly in this situation, you know, the old song that we grew up with as kids, right? The ankle bones connected to the knee bones, connected to the hip bones, connected and so forth. And this is a very true mechanism. Pain or dysfunction leading to pain can start at distal points, ultimately affecting that joint space as an imbalance. And then subsequently, if that imbalance continues, you get deterioration, wear and tear, breakdown, but it's not from the joint itself.
Absolutely. So, you know, the classic example for that would be a person that has an overpronated foot, a flat foot, maybe more so on one side than the other. When that foot is really flat and it's not compensated with maybe a good shoe or possibly an orthotic, then as the foot flattens, then your lower leg bone, the tibia, internally rotates, and then your femur, the bigger bone up there, also internally rotates, and in effect makes the leg become shorter. So the pelvis and the hip drop on that side. So as the person walks, it's going to be happening over and over and over again, and then they have the greater possibility of getting what's called an overuse injury, meaning that the design has become compromised and it's just breaking down prematurely, similar to a person who has tennis elbow. That's an overuse injury. We're doing something to the elbow that it's not designed to do, and then it breaks down.
So the first symptom presentation would be something that of similar to a bursitis, if you will, or a tendonitis. It's not the joint necessarily. It's the flaring of the tissue around it, or is it the joint?
I mean, it could be both. I mean, there's certainly lots of folks that don't have chronic bursitis or tendonitis that present with just degeneration of the joint. So it can be one or the other, and that's the trick. You got to tease out what is the underlying cause. Is it a structural joint thing, or is it a connective tissue, a ligamentous or a tendon or a fascial problem, or is it referred pain? Is it referred pain from the low back? Is it referred pain from an undiagnosed hernia? Is it a referred pain for a woman for endometriosis? So you've got to look at the big picture. And unfortunately, just because there's some degeneration on the film, we can't sell the farm that that's the only cause. And we see that a lot, and I know you do. For, you know, people get back surgery because there's a bulging disc, but, you know, the disc wasn't causing the pain.
No, and in so many cases it's not.
Yeah, so, and then they get the surgery and the pain pattern doesn't improve. So, you want to look at, you know, all factors.
My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening at the Result Center for Healing in Fairfax, January the 23rd, 7 p.m. You know, we're going to be talking about the elimination of pain, not just the identification of it, but how do you get rid of this stuff? What do you do differently to make a difference? How do you get your life back if you've been diagnosed with anything from an arthritic condition to bursitis or tendonitis, or I don't know why, take these drugs and, you know, call me in 3 years. This is an opportunity to, from one of the guys who are very intuitive, very insightful, a master in being able to weed things out. Call us at 703-698-7117, but more importantly, go to rosellecare.com. That's rosellecare.com, rosellecare.com. And then scroll down about halfway down the page, and you're going to see Wednesday the 23rd, knee and hip pain, natural approaches eliminating pain. Register now. Click the button. We'll see you this Wednesday evening. Remember, these classes that we do, our in-house continuing education programs, are for you. There are no charge, but we do require a reservation, so make that happen. To call us here, 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. Love to talk to you on this subject or virtually anything else. Let's go back to what we were talking about, Dr. Harlan. This, you know, you talked about referred pain patterns, and, you know, we're going to start with the easy stuff. You talked a little bit about back pain referring into hips. So we have a silent back pain, meaning there's really no pain. There might be some restriction if we watch the patient, you know, on a treadmill walking and we test them. But we have the inability of the patient to move. Their knee won't flex completely, or they can't move upstairs. And the joint's not hot, and just happened, and meaning within the last year. How do you distinguish? Is it from the back, or is it from, and why is it from the back if you're having this kind of mechanical disruption?
Well, you certainly want to listen to the person's history. You know, they'll tell you when it started and what makes it better and worse. You watch the person move. That'll often give you a lot of information. You'll see people become antalgic, meaning that they start favoring certain joints. And then range of motion and muscle testing, orthopedic testing, you put those in, and then you have a pretty good understanding of what's going on. I look at x-rays and MRIs and CT scans, all of which I use all the time, as confirmatory to what I find in the treatment room, and not necessarily as my primary way of diagnosing somebody. But, you know, we're going to order those diagnostics as well. And then you should have a pretty good understanding of where it's coming from.
You know, the interesting thing, and you just brought it out, is the chicken and the egg situation when it comes to diagnostics. There's too many people, too many physicians across the board, regardless of their specialty area, that use CT and MRIs and x-rays as the primary mode of diagnosis, which it shouldn't be that. It should be the examination, the evaluation, the observation, the inquisition, if you will, determining what test to run as a confirmatory procedure, which you already might suspect.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And the one thing that we have to understand is that the body is pretty miraculous in its ability to keep on going, even though it's pretty beat up. In other words, I take x-rays of people all the time for low back, and we'll happen to see maybe in their upper lumbar spine or into the thoracic spine that they have a compression fracture. And the person has no pain there. So the moral of the story is I found that compression fracture by chance because I'm looking at their low back problem. So it just shows you we can be really beat up and still be highly functional. So you want to make sure that the examination parallels what you're finding on the x-ray or the MRI. Because you might be opening up a Pandora's box, going after something that's relatively stable, that if you just work around it and maybe strengthen around it, that'll be perfectly fine.
Unfortunately, we see patients at the end of the journey. They've been on all kinds of medications. They say, well, I hurt a little bit, and they've been put on this. I'm having a little difficulty to put on this. How often, in your experience, do you see a patient that now they've got a degenerative joint, they have knee problems that are bone on bone, that could have been avoided if they hadn't taken the drug?
I would say an overwhelming majority of them. And I'll also put some of the burden on them and say that a lot of them don't do anything proactively to improve it. There's no teamwork. The person wants a one-hit wonder as far as a medication. They don't want to make the lifestyle changes. They don't want to stretch. They don't want to move. They don't want to exercise. But yet they want an outcome that's going to make them feel better. So it's, you know, it's a tandem approach.
You know, that we've said many times on the program when we've talked about all kinds of structural problems that when you start taking medication to just dampen down the symptoms, you're actually perpetuating, increasing the potential of that joint being destroyed, because what it does, it gets into the joint space and competes with the things that are necessary to fix the cartilage, to fix the ligaments and tendons. And so subsequently now you've got a slow, insidious insult that continues to erode the joint, ending up in arthrosis. My guest, my admiration, Dr. Hartland Browning. We're talking about hip and knee pain this Wednesday evening. He will be your host, your presenter. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live in studio. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Love to talk to you. We're talking about hip and knee pain with none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. He will be your presenter, your host this Wednesday evening, January 23rd at 7 p.m., and he's going to be talking about knee and hip pain, but more importantly, the natural approaches to eliminating that pain and getting your function back. Wouldn't it be great to be able to get rid of that cane, get you off the medications, the steroids, the end job of your doctors injecting and saying, let's wait and see what happens, and then you end up with an artificial hip, an artificial knee, which really don't work very well. Let's talk about that. So many people end up in surgery. And at some point, you know, down the road within the next few weeks, we'll talk about the application of stem cell when the joint is really fully destroyed. But how often do people end up with surgical intervention? And one, it's not necessary. Two, it doesn't resolve the problem.
I guess it would be best to look at the age population. If a person is really of advanced age, and there's a huge amount of impairment, in other words, the legs giving way, then that person probably has, should get that hip replacement or knee replacement. But for the majority of folks who start having their issue in their 40s, maybe their 30s, early 50s, that's not the case. The issue is that they just let time go by, and then the situation becomes progressively worse and less stable. It's all about the stability. If you don't have stability, then you are in a pretty bad place.
You know, you made a statement in the first part of the program that the destabilization in the joint, whether it's knee or hip, can be distal in its initiator. It can be the foot. You brought out that somebody could be extremely pronated where the foot is flat and it's going to rotate the tibia. It's going to cause problems at the knee level. The fibula head is going to be compromised as well. And so much knee pain is fibula displacement, if you will, what we call a subluxation, a torsion subluxation, meaning out of its normal place. But the pain is significant. The patient can't move, can't walk. So when you deal with that, when you're dealing with this cascading effect, if you will, you know, how do you begin to really look at a younger person and say, hey, listen, don't put up with this nonsense? You know, it's not about taking a drug and making the pain go away. It's about actually getting this thing handled.
You know, patient education is a huge part of it. So you want to make sure that they understand the way the body works. You don't need to be an engineer to understand simple concepts the way your house is built, for example. The same thing is true for the body. You don't have to be a medical professional to understand some of the concepts that we're talking about today and I'll be talking about on Wednesday. If you know the way we're designed and you know what's happening to that design over time and you can, you know, illustrate that that's not ideal, it becomes pretty easy for somebody to say, you know what, I'm going to do something about this now, especially if it's cutting into their quality of their life. They're now all of a sudden, they're not going skiing or they don't play golf. They don't even want to garden. They don't even want to clean their own house. So you have to look at their motivating factor. And sometimes that's not what you think it would be.
You know, one of the things I ask patients when they come in is when was the very first time you've ever had something occur? Because we tend to forget the initiator. And it could have been 20, 30 years ago. What did you do about it? What did you do that didn't work? And then the question I follow up with is, what have you given up in your life so it doesn't hurt anymore? And then when they tell me, I look at them, and I say this very sincerely. I said, that's okay with you? You know, you've given that up. You're not willing to take the steps. You'd rather take medication and drugs to quiet the symptom rather than resolving the problem. So I want to go back. We got about a minute and a half before we have to break, but I want to go back and talk a little bit about that structural back. And we don't have back pain, but we have hip and knee pain. Why does that occur?
If we don't have a level pelvis, then we're not going to put equal amount of force on both legs. That's number one. And number two, because the pelvis is so large and there's so much there as far as pain generating tissues, you'll often see referred pain from the back and what's called the sacroiliac joint. The SI joint is the back part of our pelvis, and there's a bone in the center called the sacrum, and there's two hip bones called the ilium, and there's a huge confluence of ligaments that sit on top of it. It's a huge pain generator in itself. Those ligaments emit a lot of pain, not to mention all of these nerves that pass through these little tiny openings on their way down to the bottom of the leg. So you'll get what's called a peripheral nerve entrapment. The nerve will get pinched on the outside. That's what carpal tunnel is. It's the nerve being pinched in your wrist. Well, the same thing can happen in your hip. It can happen in the low back and all the way down the leg, and it just might mimic us having a hip problem when, in fact, it's actually a nerve problem.
You know, the interesting thing is I'll tell patients, you know, they end up with a problem, carpal tunnel, where there's a knee problem, and now it hits the other side. I said, this is not an infectious process. This is something that is mechanically destabilizing now all of your body. And if we don't stop it, it's going to start influencing other areas as well. We're coming up to the midpoint of the program. We're here at 888-630-9625. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening at the Results Center for Healing. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. It is a very cold day outside, so bundle up. Make sure your head, your neck, and your hands are covered. This Wednesday evening, the 23rd of January, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax, we will be doing our in-house continuing education program, and the presenter, none other than my guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, is going to be talking about knee and hip pain, but eliminating it naturally without the steroids and the drugs and the potential surgeries that you're contemplating. There's a lot easier way to make this happen. So call 703-698-7117. Or simply go to rozellecare.com. That's R-O-S-E-L-L-E-C-A-R-E.com. Go about halfway down the page. You're going to see the ad for it and hit the thing that says register now. And we will see you this Wednesday evening. You know, Dr. Brown, I have a lot of things to ask you, but before we do that, let's go to the phones. And just remember, 888-630-9625 is how you find us here. John, thank you for being extremely patient. How can I help you? John, are you gone? John is gone. So, John, if you need to talk to us, call back. You had been holding quite some time, so let's give it a try again. 888-630-9625. Dr. Browning, I want to go back a little bit on unnecessary surgeries. There was an article that we were talking about earlier on, and it said that the greatest majority of knee surgeries are not only unnecessary, but they're problematic. They can cause things to be much worse.
Yeah, especially in reference to meniscal issues. And the meniscus being a little cartilage pad that separates the bones and, you know, the upper bone or leg from the lower bone. What used to be pretty common, what's called arthroscopic scoping, getting in there and cleaning up the knee, has now become less common because as time gone by and we've seen the outcomes, we realize that they're not as good as we thought they would be. And I believe that largely has to do with when they clean the knee up, they clean that damaged cartilage. They also have to take away some of the healthy tissue because you have to smooth it out and round it out. Now you have a smaller surface area that has to hold your body up. So over time, that's going to, in many cases, break down faster. So sometimes it's better just to let Mother Nature take care of it and rehabilitate it and treat it and, you know, do all those things than it would be just to go in and do surgery right out of the gate.
So here's the interesting thing. You have a lot of surgeons that will tell patients that, you know, there's damage. There's a floater in there. Are we still talking about the same unnecessary surgery, or is that something that takes the next step?
No, I mean, no, the floater, that's a little different depending on how big the piece is. That's the one where they actually could go there and just scope it and take it out and we go about our business. It's when they decide to excavate the whole knee out that it becomes a bigger issue. One of the classic cardinal signs that will tell you that you have a floater, and this is when you need to possibly think about the surgery, is when your knee locks in place. And that's not a lot of people, but that's a sign that you've probably torn that meniscus and there's something floating around free and it's getting caught. If it's a really large piece, then the body doesn't necessarily reabsorb it. So that's one of the cases when, if a person has to do some sort of surgery or scope, it actually will help. But the issue is becoming when we just go in there, like I said, and excavate for the sake of just cleaning it up.
You know, it's an interesting process. We've dealt with so many people with so many different types of joint dysfunction, degeneration, problematic issues over a period of many years. And knee and hip pain is one of those bugaboos. I use that word kind of old school. But it really is one of these things that it can be fully resolved if you handle it properly and you get it done the right way. You got to put the fire out. But otherwise, that cartilage, that joint that we're talking about right now, whether it's the hip or the knee, now becomes deteriorated. And now we've got degeneration. We've got what's the typical arthritic condition that starts showing up. When you look at something that's highly resolvable and you see people come in at the end of the day because it was mishandled, mistreated, you know, you say, you know, this is not good. Let's talk about the nutritional pathway. Let's talk about somebody gets hurt and they get hurt on top of a biochemical system that is very acidic because of the, you know, my mantra, sugar, sodas, coffee, black teas, fast food, fried foods, alcohol, gluten, additives, preservatives, GMO products, and so forth. So the body is, it's like throwing something in a pool of acid, if you will. How much can be resolved simply by, if the patient understands that they're doing this, would small injuries be prevented in becoming huge injuries that ultimately end in surgery?
Well, certainly inflammation has a large part of this. And I would say that diet has got to be a big, you know, a big component of any kind of healthcare program. Specifically, I look at inflammation when the person has migrating pain, meaning today it's on the outside of the knee. 2 days ago was the upper part of the knee and behind the knee. In other words, it's the pattern says to me that the inflammation is just migrating. Now, this is the person I think who's going to respond really well to changing their diet. Now, the hard part is getting them to actually do that. People don't realize that they eat a lot more grains and a lot more refined flours and sugars and things of that nature than they thought that they ate. And that's really because we don't take the time to look at what our diet is all about.
You know, there's an interesting article that I was reading. It just dawned on me a minute ago. And it's the incidence and risk factors for infection after surgery and knee surgery, particularly after total knee replacement. And it was quite, you know, breathtaking, if you will. They did a study. It was about 180 patients that underwent total knee replacement. And 5.6 of the percent of these patients had superficial infections. Up to 7.39% of them had much deeper embedded infections. So when you're looking at that number, that's significant. So the only reason I bring it up is that, look, even though that it seems to be a small number of people, are you going to be the one or two in 100, if you will, that has a very significant problem where, you know, you're going to have to go in and have the knee redone again, you know, or should you be doing something else besides the that type of replacement? You know, what causes the infections afterwards? Sometimes it's a problem with the surgical suite itself. Sometimes it's things that are already there, bacterial that get into the wound from God knows where. But the thing is, you have to take a note of all these things that take place and understand that you could be the one that is going to have the consequence. You're going to have the sequela of something that you don't want to get into. 888-630-9625. Dr. Browning, let's reveal this thing a little bit more. So when you see a patient and you diagnose them and they've got an arthritic condition, the x-rays come back in, and there's narrowing of the joint space. You know, you see a little bit of spur formation, but the actual integrity of the bone at that point is still okay. They still have functional motion, so, you know, differentiating. If you move the joint, they still have some motion. They lock in muscle inhibition, but if they move the joint, they got a problem. So you know you have an inflammatory reaction to the bursa and the soft tissue. How many of these beginning stages, if you will, where you're starting to get narrowing of the knee joint or the hip joint can be reversed and get patients off of their medications and get them functional again if they do what you tell them to do?
Well, the narrowing of the joint is only as significant as it relates to the loss of the motion of that joint, meaning that on film, somebody could have 50% reduction in the joint space. That's the distance from one bone to the other. But they still might have 90% of what we consider to be normal range of motion. So this person's actually in a really good place if they put something into position coming out of the gate to address it. So I almost always look at the level of the impairment. You hear this from me all the time. What is the impairment? The impairment means what has changed and has become more permanent. Okay, how are they different from someone else? And if they start to lose significant range of motion, then your window of opportunity becomes a little less. So the necessity for that person to seek treatment is almost always immediate. But I tell people, you know, it's not a wait and see thing. You know, we can have a huge advancements in arthritis in just 3 or 4 months. So it doesn't have to take 3, 5, 10 years. So if the range of motion is getting pretty slim, then we got to go and we got to do it now.
if you have a patient that comes in and they have these presentations, pain, inability to function, if a patient has hip pain, should they be able to bend over and, you know, get close to touching the lower part of their leg, or is that restricted? Where would that motion be? Is it going to come from the hip or is it going to come from the back? How would you differentiate the two?
It'll come from both areas. The quickest way to differentiate would be see what the range of motion is touching their toes and then lie them on a table and then lift their leg up, because then you can isolate one from the other. If you want to be really nitpicky, there's an orthopedic test called the sit and reach test, which if you really do it well, it's actually a fantastic test. It tells us what's the restriction in their hamstrings, what's the restriction in their SI joint, and what the restriction is in their low back. I like to use that test actually for people who have just chronic back issues that just don't want to go away. And they respond to treatment, but you know, unless you're, you know, actively treating them over and over again, the problem comes back, and it's almost always because you're missing something. Maybe the hamstrings are too short, or maybe it's a primary pelvic problem. So you have to look at the range of the motion.
How many of those type of problems can be resolved permanently?
Oh, I mean, for many of those, it's a functional issue. It's not an arthritic condition, especially if the patient is, you know, 40 or 45 or less, the likelihood that they have significant arthritis is pretty small.
If somebody has pain in the hip itself, I mean, directly, and we're talking about a hip, we're not talking about, you know, take your hands off your waistline. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your groin areas where the leg attaches to your pelvis. How many of those conditions and those, that pain syndrome, somebody's got pain deep inside that, is actually the hip itself and not something else?
Yeah, so that's, you brought up probably what I should have brought up before we talked about anything. It's about the location. And truly a hip problem, meaning that the joint is something wrong in the joint, is almost always going to be referring pain in the groin. Okay, so when we have pain to the outside of the leg or into the buttocks, that's not necessarily a hip problem. We should probably, instead of calling this lecture hip issues, we should just say upper leg issues, because there's maybe a third of those problems are coming from the joint itself. You know, greater than two-thirds are coming from the surrounding structure. So, yes, you're right. That the pain in the groin and that crease is probably coming from the hip itself.
If you had a patient that said that, you know, it feels like their muscles are cramping, you know, and they have pain in the joint space, and then it's a little better one day, but it flips over to the other side. But the muscles seem to be tight, particularly the medial muscles, the muscles the inside of the leg, the adductor muscles as we know them to be. You know, and they try to bend, but it feels like it's way too tight, but it might be way overstretched. Again, differentiating that to a primary hip problem, or is it something else?
No, you definitely have to do that, because the muscles will mimic a joint problem. So there's lots of muscles in the front part of the leg, and the ones that I typically look at is a group of hip flexors called the iliopsoas. They actually cross over the front part of the leg, and they will rub on the brim of our pelvis, and it will be deep pain in that groin. There is muscles on the outside, the IT band, that will give us pain a little bit further outside. And like you said, the adductor muscles, they attach to the pubic bone. Well, muscles have a unique referral pattern, meaning that when they get irritated or inflamed, they're going to produce pain that might be outside the location of that muscle or the trigger point in that muscle. If you're so inclined and you're a geek like me, there's a two-volume series on trigger points by Janet Trevelle. I know you have
excellent book.
I mean, it'll blow your mind when you see how far away from the irritation of the muscle the pain might be. I mean, we're talking really
way
far.
Distant.
Yeah,
right.
So you have to think about the muscular component. I would up our game on that, especially if we get any kind of snapping or popping sound. It's called snapping hip syndrome. So as the muscle gets inflamed, it'll go back and forth across the, you know, ridges of the bone and make this popping sound that goes over and over again, kind of reproducible, as opposed to the person who occasionally gets a pop in their knee if they bend it all the way. That sounds like the meniscus trying to reclaim itself, trying to pull back into position.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with a patient the other day who had hip replacement surgery and knee replacement on the opposite side, and it had been done many, many years ago. And he was telling me this guy now is about 79 to 81 years old. I forget his exact age. And he was telling me that, you know, it hurt all the time, and that the only relief that he could get, interestingly, was standing. But if he had any motion, it got worse. Now, we've got two artificial joints. And I said, how long ago? So this surgery was done when he was in his early 60s. Well, the truth of it is, what happened is he's lost bone mass. And the doctor told him, these replacements will outlive you. The truth of it is, yes. But now that he's lost bone mass within the system, that the joint is not stable. And that's what he's feeling. He's feeling the pain because of his instability in the joint itself.
Yeah, and in some cases, too, the screws over time can back out. And, you know, there's certainly things like that. But you definitely have to look at the way the body responds to whatever's put in. Sometimes it doesn't respond in kind, and we get, you know, types of autoimmune issues because of it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that these kind of things aren't put forth in the patient to begin with to make those decisions. We're coming on to break. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening, 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. Join us. If you've got any kind of knee or hip pain opportunity, you might be able to get rid of it 100%. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
105.9 FM and AM 630, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday, high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. And those of you around the country, do the math. Thank you for listening to us and telling everybody about the program. I know many of you are listening online and later on going to podcasts, so we appreciate that. We're here to serve you. You know, as I've always said, and I want you to remember, that our job here is to give you information, to provoke you, to make you think. We want you to understand that I want to stir up that doubt process. I want you to get that. Is he really telling me the truth? I want you to do your own research. I want you to make your own decisions. We have the ability to draw off of information. We want to make it a little controversial for you, but we want you to do your own thing. Make that happen. We're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. He will be presenting this Wednesday evening, the 23rd, at 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. Knee and hip pain, natural approaches to eliminating pain. Register immediately now. Go to rozellecare.com. Do not hesitate, because you know when this guy presents, there's many of you that want to hear the expert. So do that today. Go online after the program, or do it while you're listening to me. R-O-S-E-L-L-E, Rozellecare, C-A-R-E.com, rozellecare.com. Register, and we'll make sure that we have a seat for you. Dr. Harlan, you know, this is a program that you're going to be presenting this Wednesday evening that is so important, because when you lose functional capacity, when you don't have the ability to move and do, you lose your life. You know, there's an old guy that used to say that as long as you have your legs, you have your life. But once you lose the ability to move and to function, everything slows down. You can't do what you like to do. What are you going to be talking about this Wednesday?
You know, hopefully we're going to give people some information that they can use right away. I see a lot of folks believe that having pain is normal and it's okay, and then the pain gets progressively worse, and then they can't do much of anything. So we're going to try to open people's eyes to the way that they can change things, help them identify the things that they might be doing wrong, and give them some conservative options on treating themselves. Again, like I said before, it's a partnership. When you go to a doctor's office, you're going into a partnership. And if you expect that practitioner to do everything for you, you think you're missing the boat. So we're going to talk about the things that people should do ongoingly every day. Just, we're talking 5 minutes each day. If they do certain stretches or exercises and dietary changes, it's going to make a huge difference to their pain problem. And it'll make a huge difference to their life, because like you said, if you don't move, it's going to affect the rest of your body, your heart, your lungs, your metabolism. I mean, everything down the road involves moving. So when we stop doing it, bad things happen.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier in the program, we talked about the medications people take to stay out of pain. We talked about steroids and the injections into the joint spaces to eliminate the inflammatory reaction. But the problem is, as we touched upon, as the joint space is destroyed because of the injection of that steroid. But here's the problem. Not only is it affecting the joint, but it's affecting the entire body. And you have other sequelae as a result of that as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's always side effects. And lots of nutrients need to be used to help process medications ongoingly. So people ask me all the time about, you know, this medication or that medication. And I usually explain to them that the side effects are a lot of times because they deplete us of nutrients that the body needs. So you have to do an overall view of what the person wants to get done.
This Wednesday evening, you get to listen to one of the people that I have tremendous admiration for, and I learn from every time that he says anything and we go back and forth in the office. This is your opportunity. This Wednesday evening, the 27th, at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax, join us. I promise you, you'll go away with data that you can apply to help yourself across the board, and we'll answer any questions that you have. Thank you for being here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We love you all. See you next week. Bye.